This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the follicular voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Oh, you haven't used that word before. That is a new word for the podcast.
But something that is not new is you having hairs implanted into the roof of your head.
This is true. Lucky number four, Matthew. Lucky number four.
So go on, tell everyone what you've been up to.
So I was back in England for a few days, which we'll talk about. A couple of great games. 12 goals in two games I saw. 12 goals. So I was at Ipswich Sheffield Wednesday on the Saturday, Chelsea against Leicester on the Sunday, and then on the Monday, yesterday, in fact, before I flew back in the evening, I did go and have a little touch-up on my head. Just a little touch-up. Just 3,000 hairs. Just a few.
How many hairs in total, then, have you now had implanted?
Oh, I've got nothing left around the sides and back. Because they essentially, he kept using the word harvested, which isn't a positive word when he was describing the back of my head. Oh, this has been well harvested. So, yeah, I don't think I've got much left now. So I'm going to have a skin fade for the rest of my life, I think. But no, I think in total now, it must be around 12,000 to 15,000, I guess, over the four times. But I think that's it now. I think I've had number four. And just to explain, I mean, this got nothing to do with goalkeeping. So I'm sure we're going to lose a few people at this point. But basically, the whole idea, and of course, there's a few out there, famous people that have had hair transplants, or I forget what the actual technique is actually called, but basically the idea is you never go bald on the back or the sides, so they can take hair from the back and the sides and effectively redistribute it into different parts of your head. However, when I had it done the first time, naturally they can only put it in where you don't have hair. Of course, you continue to recede, so then the second time, third time, fourth time, it's covering areas. I think that's what I'd say. So I think now I am pretty much at the full head that has been done. So that should be me now.
That's bringing it back to goalkeeping. There you go. You're covering areas.
There you go. Nicely done. The bit I didn't really consider too much was the fact that a couple of things, actually. One was that I had a flight straight afterwards. So that was interesting because I had to wear a shirt. I wasn't allowed to wear a t-shirt because, of course, putting that over your head, you've got to be very careful where they put the hairs in. So I had like a shirt as if I was going out alongside my Adidas shorts that I wear on a day-to-day basis, and I do enjoy flying in, and a massive bandage around my head. So I was kind of like a mixture of Terry Butcher, you know, looked like I could be going on a night out, and at the same time, maybe going to the gym. Who knew?
Oh, so everyone would have known you had that bandage around your head with the padding on the back. So everyone would have known what you've been doing.
Yes, there was absolutely no secrets. And I got to the airport. The procedure was actually a lot quicker than I thought. So I was at the airport 6 hours early, which was... So yeah, I did see everybody coming through, which was very enjoyable. But it's done now. I am back in Dubai and I've now got to be very careful for a few days because... that's the other bit. When you sleep, you can't sleep on where they put the hair in, which you wouldn't think would be too much of a problem. But where they've covered so much of the head now, I don't really know how I'm going to get to sleep. I haven't slept yet, actually. I've got the overnight flight, so I've yet to sleep. So that's my concern, is I don't really know how I'm going to sleep.
Okay, one more question on this before we move on. You often see people who have had their hair transplants and they are red raw around the back and sides. Are you sore right now? Does it hurt?
Not yet. I'm guessing I will be, and I think I am red raw. Obviously, I can't see the back of my head, so I'm not sure if I am red raw, but I'm assuming I am. But no, it feels okay at the moment. That might just be the variety of tablets that they give you that is just masking that pain for all I know.
Okay. All right. Well, we've already brought it back to goalkeeping, I guess. We can just focus on the fact that you like to... It was what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, I think. Maybe even last week. Looking your best, feeling your best, performing your best.
There you go. That's simple enough. Let's just go with that. And I think we just put this to bed and we... well, in fact, I'd love to go to bed. Love to go to sleep. Hopefully soon. But let's put this to bed and let's crack on with the show.
Oh, okay. Let's do it. starting in the Premier League, the only Premier League game that we shall cover today. And we will begin with a quote. It was Burnley 2, Brentford 1. And the quote is, "It's not a big decision. It's not a difficult decision. It's just two good players fighting it out. And I won't shy away from having that luxury in as many positions as I can." That was Burnley boss Vincent Kompany talking about the fact that James Trafford, an ever-present and arguably one of Burnley's better performers so far this season, was dropped for Ara Muric. Muric made a number of key saves in the game, one from his own man in Dara O'Shea. That was a heavy back pass, which he managed to get back and clear off the line. Another, a one-on-one from Yohan Wissa. Then an interesting save and punch involving Ivan Toney. There was a disallowed goal late on as well, a Shandon Baptiste looper into the box, a challenge from Ivan Toney that was given in favour of a foul on Muric. Some distribution too that was highlighted after the game. What did you make of the fact that both Traff was dropped and the display of Muric overall?
Firstly, surprised. I think, again, like you say, we obviously have kept a close eye on all the goalkeepers in the Premier League and feel really sorry for James Trafford, given that, you know, I think I'm right in saying he's made the most saves in the division, certainly top two. The amount of area balls he's come for, double anybody else, etc. He's been incredibly busy. They've been defensively not overly solid, I think it's fair to say. So I was surprised and at the same time not surprised, just given that, yeah, how often do we talk about it, that I'd love to know the stats on this in terms of goalkeeping changes at teams down the bottom of the league as opposed to teams up the top of the league. You know, you often see it, even if a goalkeeper maybe isn't having their best time, but a team's winning, they might then keep their place just for the fact that, you know, you don't change a winning team. Whereas a team down the bottom, those errors that you'll undoubtedly make, given the sheer weight of work that you have to do, they're going to get highlighted that a little bit more. But certainly given a lot of the press coverage and, like you say, on the whole, it's been really, really positive. I was surprised on that front. I think then moving on to Muric, I was impressed for the fact that, as we've said many times, it's not easy stepping in when you haven't had that much game time, which he really hasn't since last season. And I thought he played well. You know, the save in particular you mentioned from Wissa up to his top left, I thought was excellent. A couple of unorthodox saves in there too. I thought he was perhaps a little bit lucky with the one where he saved, and I think there was just that moment where, of course, he's seen the ball and he wanted to go and get that second ball, but did climb all over Toney. But look, I think on the whole, had someone said to him beforehand, you can step into this game. Of course, they did get the 3 points, which is huge for them this stage of the season. And to put in a performance like that, a couple of key saves, yeah, certainly a big, big day for him.
Traff had been, up to that point, one of six ever-present goalkeepers in the Premier League. There are now only five. Any ideas who?
Oh, I like these kind of questions. I reckon I can get three of the five quite comfortably. That's my guess. So I'm going to go Pickford.
Correct.
I'm going to go with... Well, actually, it's not as easy. I'm going to go Onana. Did he miss one earlier in the season? I'm going to go Onana.
Correct.
I'm going to go with... I think I might be wrong here, but I'm going to go Martinez.
Incorrect. He's missed one game.
Yeah, I had a feeling he did. Go on. This could take all day. Go on, give me the other three.
Bernd Leno.
Yeah, of course.
Thomas Kaminski.
Yes.
And Vicario at Spurs.
Of course. There you go. It is interesting to think, cause this is also the, you know, when you talk about that number two role. So there you go. Three quarters of the Premier League's number twos have had a game already, which is, yeah, I suppose when you look at it like that, kind of when you're going into a season and you feel, you know, you're that number two, am I going to get my chance? And you kind of look back at stats, you look back at history. I wonder if that's more or less than it normally is. But the thought that actually if you're going into a Premier League season and the previous season, three quarters of the number twos did have an opportunity of game time. Yeah, I feel like that's quite a lot.
Yep, it absolutely is. And another goalkeeper who's missed just one game this season was Mark Flecken. And his slip up in that defeat to Burnley, not capitalised upon by David Datro-Fofana, it amazes me still that we still see this happen.
Yeah, you always see a couple of these a season, I feel like. I'm trying to think of a couple of classic ones. Shay Given had one from memory. I'm trying to think who he was playing for at the time, but I definitely remember him.
He was Newcastle, and it was Dion Dublin, I think, at Coventry.
Do you know what? It is one, and again, just talking from personal experience, and where you've got the ball, and you stood towards the edge of the box. Do you always check behind you? Probably not. And there's so much going on in your mind. You're thinking about your distribution. You're thinking about this, thinking about that. It did become, and I think when you see something like this, it will now become a thing that goalkeepers for the next few weeks will check behind them because of, you know, obviously didn't end up in a goal, but could quite easily have ended up in a goal. But naturally, when it hasn't happened for a period of time, it then stops being a case that you would look behind you. So, yeah, I guess the fact we haven't seen one for a while, it's maybe good timing for the attacking players to try this again. And, yeah, certainly you kind of felt like when he got the ball, he probably should score from that situation. You know, the fact that Flecken is so far out of his goal, if it had been a better touch and finish, he really should score from that situation. But I'm glad that Flecken did get away with it. And he actually recovered very well, in fairness. I thought the tackle he made was well-timed, put it out for a corner. So from what could have been a very difficult moment, I thought he recovered really well.
Into the FA Cup, the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. Quite an eventful weekend in the FA Cup. Man City 2, Newcastle 0. Stefan Ortega first, very comfortable throughout, I thought. Very good on the deck, a real competent number two. Two goals with deflection scored by City, by Bernardo Silva, although I'm not sure whether he's been able to claim them. Thoughts on the second one conceded by Martin Dubravka?
Yeah, I really felt for him in that it's one of those horrible ones that it's taken the deflection, but it's still really close to him. But it's in a position where it's that, where he's obviously already dived fully to his right, and it's then back down by his midriff in probably the one place where he's not really able to get a body part to it. So it's one of those that I'm sure, and as a goalkeeper can see, that you're sort of frustrated because it kind of feels like it goes through you. But at the same time, I think even if it's half a yard closer to his chest or half a yard the other way, you can get a foot to it. But I feel like when it's right there, right next to your stomach, there just isn't a great deal you can do. Your hands are out of action already. You're then trying to get something on it, trying to get a hip towards it or something. It all happens in a split second. Yeah, I don't think there's a great deal he can do. And I just think it's very, very unlucky.
Do you know what I didn't like about this one? It was the reaction from Jamal Lascelles. We see this often, don't we? And actually, there were a couple of occasions this week. There was one in the game involving Wickham and Northampton. The second goal scored by Wickham, conceded by Louis Morden. And his centre-back defender, whoever it was, did exactly the same thing. Just felt like he needed to let the entire crowd know that he felt Louis Morden was at fault, when in fact, he wasn't. And in this case, like you've just described there, Dubravka's not really at fault for that goal, but Lascelles' reaction was suggesting that maybe he was.
Yeah, really poor. Really poor. And also, the other way is true as well, in that the one that I'm not a massive fan of is if a goalkeeper makes a mistake and maybe the centre-half's been involved or one of the defenders has sort of been involved, and they make a point of coming over and patting you on the back, almost acting like they're being like really kind to you, when actually all they're really doing is saying to the crowd, his fault, you know, I'm consoling him, come on, do better. You know, it's just, no, I think it's nonsense. And I think that, trying to think whether it ever happened to me. I feel like it did once or twice, and I'd always make a point of pulling them the next day and being like, look, I didn't appreciate that. And I think that's quite a key point for goalkeepers as well. As much as we'll talk about, you know, technique and saves and this, that, the other, I think actually that personal relationship with your back four, back five, well, in fact, your whole team, of course, but that personal relationship goes such a long way, because moments like that shouldn't happen. That's not teamwork. That's not a conducive team when, you know, you're turning around and effectively pointing at your goalkeeper and trying to make a point to the fans or show anger towards your goalkeeper in that moment, especially given the fact there is no error there at all. And I'm sure when Lascelles watched that again and realizes that there's no error there, maybe he didn't see the deflection, I don't know. But yeah, I certainly, as a, you know, if that was me playing, I would have made a point, whether that was at full time or whether it was the next day, of having a quiet word.
Over to Stamford Bridge, which is where you've already stated you were, Richard. Chelsea 4, Leicester 2. Firstly, Jakub Stolarczyk, good to see him in, even better to see him making a penalty save from Raheem Sterling. Although, some skullduggery before from Nicholas Jackson, not quite sure what he was playing at. But we are instead, sadly, going to focus yet again on one of these.
Commentary corner.
So as I sat watching the game, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, and I did think, is this worth a commentary corner? Are we getting too carried away? Are we too sensitive when it comes to goalkeeping? But I've decided that we're not, and it was quite absurd, some of the comments that were being made. The narrative, really, the tone towards Robert Sanchez and the scrutiny on the Chelsea goalkeeper. So let's start with some facts here, right? So he's been out since December the 10th. He returned to the squad for the EFL Cup final with Liverpool. He played the next game. That was a 3-2 win over Leeds, which was the previous round of the FA Cup. This was just his second appearance in 3 months. And didn't everyone let us know about it? Wow. I mean, it was just unbelievable, some of the stuff that was coming out of the commentator, the co-commentator, the pundits. Now, granted, it may not have been Sanchez's most vintage performance, right? But the tone throughout was nauseating. So Jonathan Pearce was the main culprit. He twice referenced the fact that Roberto De Zerbi preferred Jason Steele and the perceived errors that Sanchez was making in this game were why he lost his place. He also added in what I'm going to say was a rather curt remark and a tone of voice that Chelsea paid a hefty £25 million for Sanchez in the summer. His co-commentator was Martin Keown. Now, Keown was a bit 50-50, although he did state a flailing Sanchez had played his part in Leicester's comeback for a second goal and equaliser that he had absolutely no chance with. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank was on the panel in the studio at halftime. He chucked in his two pence worth with a whole bunch of nothingness. And Sanchez, which I couldn't believe, even took collateral for the own goal where De Sassi has launched one in from about 50 yards. The whole thing was just madness and completely unfair on Sanchez.
But do you know what made this really interesting for me was obviously I was at the game, so I wasn't hearing the commentary. So I watched the game, watched both goalkeepers, like I say, touch on Stolarczyk first because, yeah, really impressed. Couple of good saves in this. He handled the occasion brilliantly. You know, he's a top goalkeeper. I was really impressed. And then Rob Sanchez, if I'm evaluating his performance, there were probably two moments, I'd say, in the game where, yeah, a little bit slow, where the ball's come back into him and it was just a little bit slow, similar to the Aaron Ramsdale one. Obviously, Aaron Ramsdale got caught out a week or two back and it was costly, where, again, it can happen, hasn't played for a little while. So, but again, he was kind of out towards the edge of his box. It was always reasonably safe. And yeah, he's got tackled and it's gone out for a goal kick, you know, is what it is. The next one is a cross. And again, hasn't played for what, 3-4 months, whatever it is. And it's a decent ball in. He's trying to affect play and he's misjudged it by, you know, a few inches, essentially. Otherwise, he gets a hand on it or catches it. So it's just a slight misjudgment. Other than that, I thought he was fine. Without doing anything, like you say, necessarily overly positive. Played a great ball out to the right winger at one point. Brilliant bit of distribution to get him onto the attack. Everything else played out well. Not overly complicated, but played out well. Like you say, no chance on either of the goals. He probably comes out with a 6 out of 10. So when I had the joy of you sending through the footage and listening to the commentary, my God, it was... And we talk a lot about narrative, but it was almost like the narrative was set possibly even before the game, you know. And obviously then when he does have a moment or two, literally two moments, even the good things he were doing, he wasn't not only not getting credit, but even looking at potentially criticising, you know, once where, he's taking a bit of time on it because he's picking out a pass to the right winger and the guy is about a yard away from him when he ends up striking it. Great bit of distribution, played it well, and even that seemed to get some criticism. And as you say, the fact that the second goal, the flailing arm, and played his part in the Brighton 2. How? Elaborate. Give us some context behind that. The pass back, oh, he's in a crazy position. No, he isn't. That's the position every goalkeeper takes. Like, you've got zero goalkeeping knowledge. Of course he's going to stand there. Why would he stand on his 6-yard box if you're a ball-playing team and you're trying to keep possession of the ball? You stand 20 yards out. He plays it back to him, plays it out the other side, and off you go. Watch Edison. Watch Alisson. They all do the same. But because this time the ball gets fired past him, apparently he's in an unusual position. Even Gary Lineker touched on that, which surprised me. And by the way, the De Sassi one, I actually felt sorry for him because he's got nudged. Like, no one seemed to point that out either, by the way.
He didn't,
he must have seen where his goalie is. Yes, he did see where his goalie is. He's got nudged. So he's miskicked it. It's not like he tried to fire it that hard into the goal. You idiots. Like, you know, you watch it, you're like, you idiots. That's all I could feel. I wrote down a few of the bits. That was it. The bit that, and you made a really good point. I mean, that Sterling obviously had a tough day, but when Sterling's taken that free kick, the comment, I think it was Martin Keown, like, oh yeah, hasn't quite caught that, but look, he's obviously doing his best. What do you mean? How can you comment on that moment in that way? Oh, he's doing his best, bless him. You know, but then Rob Sanchez, honestly.
He's doing his best. He's just launched a free kick, not even into Rose Ed. I mean, like, it's beyond Rose Ed.
Do you know what? I say that, and actually in the stadium, the thing is, I think a lot of it, and obviously being in the stadium, you can sense. So you could sense there is a feeling around Sanchez, rightly or wrongly. In my opinion, very, very wrongly. There is a certain feeling. And the same around Sterling. I did actually feel sorry for Sterling. He did really well on the second goal. Obviously, then he's had three tough moments in the game, but you could see the fans have really switched on him, and it wasn't nice to see. And you go back to that, the psychology of it, that he's playing, and you can feel that as a player, where you can sense the fans just aren't having you for whatever reason, even though a lot of this season by all accounts has been very good, but they really aren't having him. So I do wonder how much of an impact that had on some of the key moments in the game. But yeah, going back to, there was also Hasselbank, there was Dion Dublin. I wish you hadn't sent me that clip, actually, Matt. I'm annoyed with you now. I'm annoyed with you because I was in a good mood and then you sent me those clips. I'm like, what are we listening to? Like, how? And as you say, and actually we had a talk before this pod, and I know we give Gary Neville and Carragher a bit of stick sometimes. And look, the bit that I'll always admit is when it comes to the outfield side of things, they're phenomenal. And I know they're phenomenal because all my outfield mates tell me they're phenomenal. They are not phenomenal when it comes to goalkeeping. And there are some good people out there, whether it is a Petr Cech who came on not so long ago, or I know Paul Robinson's done bits in the past. I know I keep saying I think Kasper Schmeichel fits that role perfectly at some point. But I really, really hope that at some point soon we do get a goalkeeping pundit who is quite outspoken but also educated, which they undoubtedly will be, and can actually, it would spark such good conversation and actually really help. Because again, young goalkeepers looking at that, why would you ever want to be a goalie? What can you do right? There's so little praise that's given. It's so frustrating.
All right, mate, calm down. You don't want to get stressed yet. Your hair will fall out, okay? So just take a chill pill.
Very good.
There were, by the way, Sanchez was a cupkeeper used. Of the four ties, the four quarterfinal ties, four cupkeepers were used. So Bradley Collins was in for Coventry, Sanchez in for Chelsea, Stalarczyk in for Leicester, who went double bubble. They had Danny Ward on the bench too, so no sign of Mads Hermansson at all. And then Stefan Ortega in for City. I know that was because Ederson was injured, but Ortega has played in every FA Cup game so far this season, so he would have been utilised. So working for some, not so much for others, really.
Do you count Kelleher? Or is now, I know obviously again, similar situation, injury, but I assume that would also count.
That's a good point. Yes, okay, we can count Kelleher in there. So five FA Cup goalkeepers used, five cup keepers used in the four ties.
There you go. Interesting.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship, where Millwall's Matija Sarkic put in his best shift to keep Leeds at bay. In the first half, a nice dive to palm wide from Crescencio Somerville, and then a dazzling double save, plus a ricochet off the post. As Jorginho Russa thought he'd extended the home side's lead, it ended Leeds 2, Millwall 0. Dan Backman back in for Watford, and a big win for the Hornets away at Birmingham. Koji Mayoshi with a powerful drive, powerfully parried by the Austrian, who maintains his record of keeping a clean sheet in the five games in which he's been on the winning side this term. Ainsley Pearce, touch or no touch, Blackburn banking a point at Middlesbrough, and that could be because of Pearce's prowess to pat away Marcus Forss's far post connection to Luke Ayling's flicked header. At the other end, Senny Dieng doing his thing, similarist to the save from Backman and his dive when denying Elias Chair last week, actually, as Sam Gallagher saw his rasper rocket into the stands off the hands of the Borough number one, and Anthony Patterson saving the blushes of teammate Dan Ballard, who passed straight to Lucas Anderson, only to see his goal-bound effort clawed out by the scrambling stopper. There were five solid saves from the 23-year-old in this one, including another late on from Chris Willock to force another goalless draw.
Right, where do we start? Let's start with Anthony Patterson. As you say, the recovery save in particular, very, very good. Looked like he might have hurt himself a little bit after making it, like stayed down for a little while. But yeah, obviously ball, possession lost, so close to goal, got himself back so quickly, sharp down to his left. Big, big save. And I've written down different words for all these saves. So Senny Dieng, explosive, I went with, which I guess would probably sum up Senny Dieng. Such an explosive goalkeeper and speed of reactions, getting up to his left. Big, big save. Ainsley Pearce, I've written improvisation. because we talk about it a lot in terms of goalkeeping. It's very rarely black and white. And this was one of those situations that you just can't replicate in training, where you're running back towards your goal. It's going, looks like it's going in the top corner, and he's managed to maneuver his body just to get fingertips and kind of claw it out and put it in a really safe place as well. I thought it was an excellent save. Dan Batman really, really sharp to his left. This is point blank. The speed at which he gets to his left, very impressive. And perhaps the best for last, I thought Sarkic was excellent. Really, really good. The save full left. It was always going to be a tough game for Millwall, but yeah, could have been more if it wasn't for Sarkic. Certainly the save full left. Set perfectly, exploded fully to his left to get fingertips to it, and the double save as well. Very, very good.
Into League One, where Harry Eistead is improving game by game at Charlton, now very much in his stride following an injury-hit campaign. So first, a tasty tip over from a Xavier Simons volley, then a lovely one-hander over the bar as Brendan Sarpong-Weredu danced his way into the box, and finally, a solid spread after Tom Lonergan had connected with a late cross for a potential winner. The Addicts claiming a point away at Fleetwood there. Lucas Jensen loving life at Lincoln. One goal conceded in six, 16 scored by the Imps in their last three. But even though they battered Bristol Rovers 5-0 at the weekend, it actually wasn't as one-sided as the scoreline would have you think. Chris Martin twice denied at 1-on-1 at 1-0 and 2-0. Even at 4-0, the Dane demonstrated wild celebrations after seeing an Anthony Evans penalty blaze high and wide. Joel Pereira reaching league start number two in a 4-0 win for Reading over Cambridge, equaling the exact number of starts he's had in each of the previous three seasons. So currently in for David Button and showing silky skills alongside a double save from Elias Kachunga. Or was the second stop a goal line clearance, Richard? A few of those this weekend, by the way. An apology owed to Wickham's Franco Ravizzoli. So last week we intimated Max Striek would return to the fold following his suspension. He did not. The Argentine stayed put and bagged two clean sheets in the space of a few days against Wigan and Northampton. He's looking more and more comfortable with each game that goes by.
Indeed. Well, first and foremost, a big well done to him, certainly Max Striek. Another very solid season from him. Obviously very, very good last season. So for Ravizzoli to have the confidence and faith of the manager, and a lot of that, we talk about a two becoming a one, whether that's actually happened just yet. I know it's still very early on, but yeah, must be training very well. Obviously the games he's played have been very good. So huge well done to him. I absolutely love Jensen's energy. The two spread saves he made in particular, just perfect. You know, again, young goalkeepers, if you get a chance, go and have a look at the saves that he made in this one for Lincoln, where we talk about the timing of the spread, getting as close as you can and then making yourself as big as you can. I just don't see how anyone scores past him. When he executes it like he does, certainly on a one-on-one, when he executes it like he does and gets to that point, spreads, it's such a powerful spread. He gets so close, so brave as well, really. And you could see that from the passion again, celebrating after the penalty. It's quite nice to see that when it means so much to keep that clean sheet. So yeah, excellent performance from him. As you mentioned, Harry Eistead, a couple of big saves in this one, important saves as well. Good tip over, brilliant save with his left hand, the tip over the bar, great reactions, managed to get enough of a hand to get over the bar, and a nice little star jump save in there as well, which I thought was very, very good.
So we do have one more to cover in League One, pointed out to us by @KTownNico on Twitter. And this is Joe Wildsmith, save of the weekend contender in a humdinger of a clash between Derby and Bolton at the top of League One. So it was a massive stop from John Daddy Budvarsson a quarter of an hour in at 0-0. Derby went on to win the game and thus widened the gap between them in the automatic places and the Trotters in the playoff spots to 5 points. And I'm delighted to say that can mean nothing other than this. Yes, it is a text talk. It is back. So Joe has very kindly broken the save down. He's broken the moment down. To be fair, he's broken basically everything down that you can think of and provided us with the following voice note. Take it away, Joe.
Rich, Matt, thanks for having me on the pod. I listen in every week, so it's great to talk through my save from the weekend. A little bit of context. It's second v third, Derby v Bolton in League One. Over 32,000 in the stadium, and the atmosphere was incredible. It was a deafening loudness and really difficult as a goalkeeper to get any information across to anyone in and around you. So I think that sort of makes it a little bit more special that there was such an atmosphere and such an important game. We were under the cosh for a little while in the first half, and the ball's found its way to Ogbetta on the left wing. At this point, I've taken a moment to scan and see what's going on in my penalty area. I've noticed that Nels has took a position at the near post, sort of guarding that area, and hopefully anything sort of comes in low that he can deal with. But there's still a bit of a 6-yard area where they can swing a ball in early for someone to get onto. Bodvarsson's taken up a position around the penalty spot with Cash, and then sort of there's another player sort of drifting in at the back post. So I've taken up a position in the case of a low cross. So I've gone a little bit sort of more advanced towards my near post so that I give myself best chance to cut out a low cross or even advance onto Bodvarsson if he makes a run across the front and make a block on contact. So I've better swung a ball in above Nels's head. I've swung my head round, tried to get eye contact at what's going on in the middle of my box. I've seen that Bodvarsson's got a yard on Cash, but just as the ball's getting swung in, Cash has given him a little tug, so he's a bit off balance and stretching over his right shoulder. So made a bit of a decision that probably if Bodvarsson is to get contact on the ball, the only place he could really go is if he gets good contact, then at me with pace, or if he's still stretching a little bit, then he's only going to be able to go across me into that far left post. So made a decision, backed my instincts. I sort of let myself go, dived to my left, kept my body weight forward, stuck out an arm and committed to my decision. I mean, luckily enough, I stuck my left arm out, hits my left hand, keeps it out, and then Cash was on hand to clear. But it was just especially nice to sort of make a save like this, where it happens so many times with cutbacks and crosses where you spin into your goal and you've just sort of got to let yourself go and hope that the ball hits you at times. But at this point, it did hit me. I kept the ball out, and I think in such a big game, it was just even more special that it did come off. Me and Andy Warrington, the goalie coach, we speak about it all the time in training, try and get into good habits, and then it sort of becomes instinctive that's what you do in those situations. So it was great that the work that sort of goes on behind the scenes could really pay off in a game that meant so much for everyone at Derby. It was just especially nice to obviously contribute to a win and then get the sort of acknowledgement from my teammates at the end and the coaching staff running on the pitch. I mean, Jesus, the gaffer nearly wrote me off, jumping all over me like that. But yeah, great to talk you through my save. I look forward to listening in for the rest of the season. Always nice to get a clean sheet, so looking forward to Clean Sheet Club. Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
So there it is, Joe Wildsmith. I loved every minute of that.
Yeah, I absolutely love the detail that he's gone into, because it is save of the weekend. Phenomenal save for a few different reasons. I know he's touched on this in the voice note that he left already, but that was the one for me. Is we talk about that when it's a close range header, you want to give yourself maximum reaction time, but then also if you consider that you were to set in a regular position, he can't save this. You know, if it's wide of you, you can't move your hand that quickly. So to have the intelligence to set on his line like he did, was able to keep his body weight forward, already have his hands outstretched, so he's still got the ability to save it with his body, but he's also, his wingspan is that much more. Like, not many goalkeepers save. In fact, you don't save this unless you take up a technique like that. And again, we talk a lot, we have done in this show already, about how goalkeeping often isn't textbook. But this, for me, is a great example of you're in that situation there where it's such a close range header, you're not going to have much time to react. So to actually set yourself that little bit bigger, having your hands that little bit wider, just gives you the chance of maybe getting a hand to it. And yeah, as I say, this was comfortably save of the weekend. Phenomenal save.
And into League Two, penalty saves apiece for James Belshaw of Harrogate and Jackson Smith of Walsall. Belshaw bettering Dean Campbell in a goalless draw with Barrow. Smith knowing where Noah Chilvers would go to preserve a point at Colchester. A really good tip over from Smith from Cameron McGeehan's close range header in that one too. Plus a low dive to deny the same man in the first half, and a good pat wide from an awkward Brad Ahivian effort in the second half. A lovely sidewinder late on in that one as well. Timotei Lotutala diving to his heart's content as Doncaster made it 5 wins in 9 since his arrival on loan from Hull. 3 draws and 1 defeat in that run. The latest victory coming at Swindon, where headers from Russian Hepburn Murphy and Charlie Austin were slapped away by the Essexian Frenchman. Radivítek also on loan at Accrington from Manchester United and making a save of the weekend contender. Macaulay Langstaff looking to redirect Charlie Colquitt's bouncing volley from 6 yards, but Vítek managing to divert it over the bar. Really, really good save, that one. And finishing on yet another podcast debutant, MK made for MK. Michael Kelly giving a go at Milton Keynes, deputising for the injured Philip Marshall and making a real fist of it with his first foray into English league football. Following up a penalty save at Grimsby in midweek were key and very impressive stops from Cruz, Ryan Cooney and Elliot Nevitt. MK running out 3-1 victors.
Yeah, some great stuff in League Two. Couple that I'll touch on. Great save from Lotitala to his left. And again, this one of those where he's moving quickly to his right. The speed at which he adjusts and gets himself back to his left to get fingertips and get it away from danger. Very, very good. And the save from Vítek in particular. That's one of those where, again, you talk, you go with your feet, you go with your hands, where it's just close enough. I think when you've got the flexibility and the power to do that, and you can split your legs that quickly to get your right foot to it, the speed at which he did it and for it to go up and over the bar, brilliant, brilliant save. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, we are getting to the latter stages of the season. It is time for this. That's right, it's Clean Sheet Club, and it does seem like there's a lot of clean sheets this week, which is never great news for me, but let's get going. Starting the Premier League, Bernd Leno, yes, into the Championship. Carl Rushworth, how no double dare you? Dan Batman, first in 5 months. Vaclav Gladke, ever present. Senny Dieng, hat-trick. Ainsley Pears, threes up. Freddie Woodman, 3 from 4. Victor Johansson, about time. Lee Nichols, makes sense. Angus Gunn, following Mark Bunn. Anthony Patterson, following Thomas Sorensen. Asmir Begovic, come on you Ranger boy. Alex Palmer, reading the game. Ilian Melier, hat-trick mark 2. Into League 1, Liam Roberts, tall tyke. Luke Southwood, robust Robin. Joe Wildsmith, text talker. Viliami Sinsalo, loves a back-to-back. Lucas Jensen, 9 and 12. Will Norris, relentless. Jamie Cumming, tally doubled. Joel Pereira, on the board for 23-24 and first since August 21. Marco Morosi, shrew blue. Sol Brin, 2 in a week. Sam Tickle, 4 in every other with a 1-0 win. Franco Ravizzoli, serving up blanks on a Mar del Plata. Into League 2, Nick Townsend, nearly Newport's number 1. Paul Farman, 3 and 4. James Belshaw, stalemate City. Steve Arnold, on the board for 23-24, mark 2. And first since December 2020, Luke McGee, skibbidi.
Very good, Richard. Very good. So there were a lot. It was quite a weekend in the EFL for clean sheets. So across the 22 games in the Championship and League One, there were 25 clean sheets. Only in one game did both teams score. That was Fleetwood versus Charlton. But that is, yeah, that's quite the record.
Quite something. Yeah, delighted to have that many clean sheets to talk about, especially when I didn't, again, know what half of them were referring to. But thank you for that, Matt.
The table is pretty much as it stood last week. Alex Palmer with 16 in 38. He has been leapfrogged by Lucas Jensen, who now has 17 in 39. Ian Melier also with 17. That's in 36. Top of the table still remains Will Norris with 18 in 39. Melier did miss a couple of games earlier on in the season, didn't he? With suspension, was it? It was, wasn't it? He got red carded. So you just wonder whether he'd played those games, whether he'd be either on par or ahead of Will Norris. But with just a few games to go, it is all to play for.
It is. But you do wonder, I think, you know, are the Premier League lads listening in, you know, the likes of Edison Alisson, and making the point that their ratio is that much better? Does that count for anything?
Well, it used to count. And to be fair, do you remember the years when Edison and Alisson were still up there? They were still competing with them, even though they played less games. But not so much this season, nor last season either.
Yeah, fair point. Well, Will Norris, it is yours for the taking. Not many games left now. What was it, 7 games left?
7 games left, yep.
We shall see. It is the exciting part of the season. I know that they will be listening in every week, hoping that they're top of the table.
Just to finish on some admin, Richard, former Luton Town and England goalkeeper Ron Bainham has sadly passed away at the age of 94. So Bainham made 434 appearances for the Hatters. He arrived in 1951 and played his last game in 1965. Three international caps for England, and he was England's oldest surviving international player at the time of his death. So condolences go to the Bainham family. Elsewhere, a goalkeeper in non-league has apologised. Get this for a headline. Goalkeeper apologises after signing, conceding for, headbutting fan and being sacked on the same day. So this was Louis Patching of St Ives Town. He'd been signed on a dual reg with AFC Ruston and Diamonds after they had an injury to their first choice goalkeeper. Debut didn't go too well against Lytown. They got battered. He was then confronted in a bar afterwards by a fan. He's lost his head, and yeah, that was that.
I mean, yeah, you talk about tough debuts. That's up there. That's a collection. I mean, there's not much more he could have got, really. Maybe give away a penalty, maybe a red card, but yeah, I think he's ticked most of the boxes.
And finally, I don't know whether you saw this, David James returned to action at the weekend. He turned out for AFC Huttwood in the City of Southampton Sunday FL Division 1. That was against Maidenheath United. And he scored the winner. A free kick at the age of 53 years old from David James. So well done him. It was actually quite a nice touch. So he's an ambassador for Utilita, and they have a campaign called Football Rebooted, which aims to provide football boots for those who cannot afford them. AFC Huttwood went all in, filled up a massive bin full of boots, put it on social media, and he said, when's your next game? And along he went.
Well, there you go. There you go. I did question the goalkeeping on this one, I have to be honest. I think that nice strike from David James, but I mean, look, we're not going to do analysis on that, but I think that maybe if David James was in goal, I don't think this ends up as a goal.
Okay. A nice story though, Richard. Let's just leave it at
lovely
that.
Lovely story. No, let's just focus on that. I mean, look, we're a goalkeeping show. I focus. Doesn't matter who you are, where you are. That's what I focus on.
You were about to scratch your head then, and you had to check yourself.
So close. I keep going to do it, and luckily I haven't yet, but it's going to happen. I'm going to end up, but by the end of the 3 days, I'll have ended up scratching out all the good work, no doubt. Those 3,000 hairs will soon be a couple of hundred.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers.
Oh, wait.